all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense for a Friday, February 24th, 2023. It is another beautiful day on Lake Wissota, although a very, very cold morning on Lake Wissota. It is 8 below 0 here, still above zero down in Madison, where we will talk to Aaron Zommers in just a moment, but in the teens below zero in other places not far from here. So keep that in mind if your school district is resuming things today. Some places might have closed for the rest of the week because of that snowstorm, but others are open today, and it's a lot colder than it's been at the bus stop most recently. Coming up this morning, the whole nation is watching our state Supreme Court race. With apologies to our friend Kristen Bry, as goes Wisconsin, so goes America's 2024 presidential election. And we're not kidding. In 2020, keep in mind, three of the current conservative Supreme Court justices were willing to consider throwing out, I'd been saying tens of thousands for the past several days. No, I went back and looked. The number was 221,000 legally cast ballots that Donald Trump was seeking to have thrown out. And the state Supreme Court, those conservative justices, were willing to consider that if it hadn't been for swing conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn saying, no, you filed this way too late and you should have filed it before you knew you lost, if you really thought you saw something wrong with the system. But the three conservatives, the other conservatives, were willing to go along. So if former conservative Justice Dan Kelly gets back on the court, as someone who was paid to advise Republicans on the fake elector scheme, could valid ballots be thrown out in 2024 and affect every state in the union in a close presidential election? We'll talk to Kia Vakil about that at the bottom of this hour. Then in the next hour, attacking the watchdogs. Now that Roe v. Wade has been repealed, right-wing politicians are going after other landmark cases that protect Americans. In one instance, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is taking steps to throw out long-held legal protections for reporters who uncover corruption and threats against democracy. Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, will talk about the dangers of powerful politicians being able to intimidate or even silence a free press. As mentioned, we'll check in with weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Vachitsky about the weekend weather outlook all across Wisconsin. And Dan Schumacher, our friend and UW-Eau Claire athletic director, will join us near the end of the show to preview how things look for sports for this coming weekend. If you want to reach the show, we got phone numbers. I got to bring them up. Here we go. If you're watching on Facebook, now you can write it down. 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And normally I would say, let's say good morning to producer Aaron Zommers, but it's actually bigger than that. Aaron Zommers joins us now with breaking news, breaking snowplow news, apparently. This is big stuff from our correspondent, Aaron Zommers. Aaron, tell us the latest on snowplows.
Good morning. Aaron Zommers from our Madison correspondent. Snowplow names election results. The Streets and Engineering Division are happy to announce the winners of the snowplow equipment naming election. They received well over 3,000 votes for each of the four pieces of equipment. I would like to thank Wisconsin Saltwise for hosting this election. So, The quad axle brine truck, the winning name is Saltimus Prime.
Saltimus Prime. Very nice.
While Saltimus is more than meets the eye, there's no disguising the positive effect the saltwater brine treatment can have when it rolls out to treat the roads prior to snowstorms.
Okay, what's next?
The MT7 trackless bike path plow is Snowby One Kenobi.
Snowby One Kenobi. Okay, I see what they did there.
From a certain point of view, Snowby One Kenobi is an elegant plow vehicle for our bicycling age. May the force be with Snowby One, always.
Right, number three.
The loader with plow and wing is Seymour Pavement.
Seymour Pavement.
Seymour sounds more like a name for a dentist than a plow truck, which made this one a close race to the end. But voters kept feeding ballots to him, and then suddenly Seymour won.
I don't know if in Madison, we want to talk about feeding ballots into something, but that's a discussion for another time. Yeah. And I believe there's one more.
The last one, the dual wing plow truck is Dolly Plowton.
Dolly Plowton.
Dolly is the best little plow truck in Madison, working much longer hours than just 9 to 5. It is known for creating the wintry favorites, I Will Always Plow You In, and Snow Lean during the same overnight shift.
Oh my. Here's the thing. When I woke up this morning, and I woke up well before my alarm, so somewhere in the middle of the night, I noticed that Mr. Zommers had sent me a text that said we had to make room for breaking news. And then I saw something about Madison's snowplows, and then I think I fell back to sleep for a little bit. But I knew to be prepared for this crucial update that I know you were following closely yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Apparently.
I saw that released on the city of Madison's website, and I just thought, wow, they really went for it, and we need to share this.
Good deal. All right. Well, there you go. And I mean, honestly, I'm not tired of it yet because, you see other cities, other states do snow plow naming. Look, whatever helps us get through winter, you know, we'll take it because winters are long here. And why just have a snow plow when you can have, give me a couple of those names again, Dolly Plowton.
Well, you can have Seymour Pavement. Or
Snowby One Kenobi.
Yep. And Saltimus Prime.
Saltimus Prime. Yes. There you go. All right. Heard it here first, folks. Breaking news. We'll take a break. Talk more about what's in the news around Wisconsin next. This is Up North News Radio for a Friday. We're going to have an update in just a sec here on a topic we first mentioned earlier in the week. It was on Wednesday when we had two state representatives in here to talk about the next CRT, the next right-wing distraction meant to get people riled up about something that should otherwise be common sense. And we'll talk about more responsible investing in just a sec. First off, a couple of other headlines to note. We did not get a chance to mention it on the program yesterday because shortly afterwards, the announcement came down that former Governor Tony Earle had passed away at the age of 86. And former Governor Earle had a lifetime of service. And I mean, he worked first to his country in the U.S. Navy, and then as an assistant district attorney, I believe it was, in Marathon County, and then city attorney in Wausau, and then he worked for, or he ran for, the state assembly. In October of 1969, there was a special election there because the assembly rep who had been serving in that seat was Dave Obey, and Dave Obey had just won a special election to Congress to take the place of Republican Mel Laird to be the new president, Richard Nixon's defense secretary, if memory serves me correctly. So Republican Melvin Laird moved from Congress into the cabinet of President Nixon. Democrat Dave Obey then moved from the state assembly seat up there in Marathon County to the congressional seat. And then Tony Earle moved into the state assembly. He stayed in that post, becoming majority leader from 1972 to 1974. Then he worked in the administrations of three different governors, Patrick Lucey, Marty Schreiber, Lee Dreyfus. Part of that time included being the secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Tony Earle ran for governor in 1982. He ran for re-election in 1986, but lost to Tommy Thompson, who that was his first of four elections as governor. Tony Earle is going to be remembered for a couple of major things that he can be proud of, not just his lifetime of service, but his stewardship of the Wisconsin environment. You know, a lot of time when people talk about Tony Evers, the current governor, they sometimes slip up and they say Tony Earle, thinking about, you know, the former governor. And the interesting thing is there are some similarities in the way that they served in roles in leadership even at the state level before becoming governor. When you think of Tony Evers, you think of somebody who for a long time was the state superintendent of public instruction. for Tony Earle, it was coming up through being Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. So in both cases, you have these Democratic governors, coincidentally named Tony, but who understood the importance of something like education in Wisconsin or the environment in something like Wisconsin, which, again, we think would be obvious to everybody, but it is not. And that's why we appreciate the leaders that we have in those roles. But the other thing that Tony Earle is going to be remembered for is something that we all take for granted now, but his early activism in promoting equality for members of the LGBTQ community is something that has endeared him to many people. It was trailblazing at the time. Not that nobody was doing it, but very few people were making, opportunities available for people to serve. He issued an executive order that established a process for gay people to bring discrimination complaints. He created a governor's council on gay and lesbian issues. He appointed an openly gay man as his press secretary. Tammy Baldwin, who went on to become the first openly gay person ever elected to the U.S. Senate, was an intern in Earle's office. And Representative Mark Pocan, a member of the LGBT community, volunteered on Tony Earle's first campaign for governor when he was in high school. And these are things that at the time, Earle also appointed the state's first female Department of Administration secretary and first Black cabinet member. And these kinds of things, he said, are taken as a given now when he talked to the Associated Press about 10 years ago when asked to kind of, look back at his career. It was a career where he tried to come back in 1988 to run for U.S. Senate, but he lost in the Democratic primary to Herb Cole, who went on to be elected multiple times. So Tony Earle then set up shop in Madison as an attorney and as an advocate for government reform. He suffered a stroke last weekend and passed away yesterday at the age of 86. When you see flags at half staff today, you'll see them that way through March 3rd, based on an executive order from Governor Evers, and then they will be lowered one more time at some point on the day of his funeral or celebration of life once that is scheduled. So that was one of our first headlines that we wanted to talk about. Another that is unfortunate to pass along is that a couple in Marshfield learned this week that their son, 28 years old, died while he was fighting in Ukraine. This story originally comes from Karen Madden at the Marshfield News Herald. He was fighting for the International Legion for the Defense of Ukraine. His name was Andrew Peters. He was a U.S. Army veteran. He had served a tour in Afghanistan in 2014, according to his father, John Peters. Andrew Peters joined the International League in late November, a couple of months back, and he was killed in action Thursday of last week. He, according to his parents, always had a strong sense of what was right and wrong. He felt the need to use his prior military combat skills to help the Ukrainian people fight and liberate their country. Andrew was extremely close to his fellow soldiers and was well-liked by everyone. His parents say, "We are all extremely proud of his bravery and selfless sacrifice." Now, we mentioned a little bit earlier about responsible investing. And it's got an acronym, ESG, which is all about, keeping the environment and social causes in mind. And when you had Francesca Hong and Christina Shelton from Green Bay on, there were concerns that they had learned about that this so-called ESG investing, environmental, social, and governance investing, would be targeted by the right wing as, quote-unquote, woke investing. And sure enough, here we are a couple of days after that warning that this was going to be coming up, and we've learned since that the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has filed a lawsuit related to ESG investing. They have filed it against the U.S. Secretary of Labor over a new rule that permits the use of environmental, social, and governance factors in retirement investing. Now, a statement from Will makes a claim here that I think deserves to be talked about, saying that, quote, "By injecting highly partisan issues like climate change and racial justice into investment strategy. The Biden administration is jeopardizing the retirement income of more than 140 million Americans. I don't see it that way. In fact, I see this as a net plus for America's retirees. This lawsuit is claiming to guard against investment mismanagement and abuse. What ESG does is reward companies who choose not to mismanage or abuse their workers, the natural resources, their consumers, and the public. In the opinion of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Will, which brought this lawsuit, and everything else that you're going to hear attacking ESG investing, to them, it has always been, dating back to the Reagan era, always about the fiduciary duty. Fiduciary duty sounds rather lofty and noble, and like we're always looking to maximize shareholder value because the shareholders are the owners of a company. But really, when we talk about fiduciary duty, it's now meant to be at the expense of everything else. It's pure profit ahead of everything. I'm investing in this company, but I know that it's got a pipeline that's polluting the waters, but you know, it's making me money. The company's turning a profit. This country is doing business with, you know, another firm in another country that, you know, uses slave labor. Well, yeah, but you know, they're turning a profit. They just did a stock buyback. Look at this price. Look at your portfolio. Instead, with ESG investing, it seems to me you're going to have companies that are going to have strategies for doing their business in a sustainable way. They are going to look for what's called operational efficiencies. They're going to engage in practices that are going to lead to a lower turnover of employees, I believe. And in the end, we'll benefit by getting back to something that sounds, you know, rather nostalgic, but I believe can still exist. And that's the hometown company. The company that will not necessarily chase profit at the expense of, you know, polluting its hometown or discriminating against members of its community. When we talk about corporate citizenship, it used to mean that companies wanted to be a good corporate neighbor where they were. But then we got to a time where it got easier than ever for companies, when they grew large enough, to move out of the country, become a multinational corporation. And at that point, they lost that connection with their hometowns. And eventually they lost that connection with their country, always looking for tax loopholes for, you know, offshore investments and what have you. And whatever they do in those other countries, we're supposed to not care about, because again, you know, as long as the stock price goes up, what's it matter? And I think enough people have seen that flaw, that perversion of capitalism over the past 40 years or so, and said, you know, I think it's time for this pendulum to come back. And we can't require companies to do things in other countries necessarily, but we also don't have to invest in them anymore. We can make other investment decisions. Not every profit or not every company that engages in poor practices are the only ones that are profitable. We can find other places to invest that will turn a profit as well. So this argument that ESG investing somehow is going to cost money for retirees has no merit. There's no proof of that whatsoever. And in fact, you can make the case that investment in smarter, more responsible companies is going to be the way to go. But this lawsuit now is going to make its way through from Will. I mean, this is the same Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty that has been at the center of things like gerrymandering, helping ensure that this current state Supreme Court, you know, protected the rigged maps, in fact, even made them more gerrymandered. This is the same group, right-wing legal group that brought lawsuits that led to the end of COVID safeguards. It's a group that stirred up trouble in the Keele School District and basically interfered with an investigation into, you know, whether a student's rights were violated. It got, it basically helped kill an investigation into potentially illegal collusion between the Scott Walker campaign and outside groups. Basically, if something has been sliding backwards in Wisconsin government or Wisconsin policies, there's a pretty good chance there's a will lawsuit at the center of it. And now they're trying to sue to make sure that responsible investing somehow gets a black eye. And some of us, it's about time we pushed back. We will take a break. We will talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil about the national attention being given to the Wisconsin Supreme Court race coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow. I'm just a kid,
and life is a nightmare. I'm just a kid. I asked Aaron to find us something that sums up how tough it is to be an adolescent. Well done, Mr. Thomas. Good work out of you. All right, it's time for Hometown Health. Dr. Lyerly, each week at this time, brings us some guests that are doing wonders in trying to make sure an entire community can stay healthy, get answers to their questions. And this time we are talking about a particular age demographic and a special focus from a clinic in Northeast Wisconsin, Kristen. So tell us more about that as you introduce our guests this week.
Boy, do we have a treat for you this morning. So we've got Dr. Sherry Hoyman and Kim Shevchik, PA extraordinaire, and they have used their talents and their friendship, I should add, over many years to pull together a really unique clinic. So those of us who are parents who have had young children who've seen pediatricians recognize that our kids get to that point where maybe a pediatrician isn't the best person for them, but maybe they're not quite ready to see a grown-up doctor. And recognizing this all those years ago, Kim and Sherry came together and decided to create an incredible adolescent clinic. So Kim and Sherry, welcome to Hometown Health. Tell us about your clinic.
Gosh, now it's like rock, paper, scissors. Who goes first? Right?
Yeah, you take it away. Yeah, well, thank you for having us. This is really a treat to be here, actually. We're super excited about our clinic. And as you said, it's kind of been a long time coming. Kim and I, about probably, I don't know, Kim, what was it, about 8 years ago, we went to a conference. We, you know, as friends, we thought, oh, it'll be fun to go to a conference together. And we did have a lot of fun there, I will say. But we also sure did learn a lot. And our big takeaway was, boy, there's a lot we could do for adolescents in our area. And what if they had their own space and their own clinic to go to for all of these things that adolescents have to make them much more comfortable? And, you know, not in the, you know, I am a pediatrician, so I'm happy that adolescents want to see me as a pediatrician. But, you know, sometimes in the pediatrician's office, you see a lot of kind of baby decor, and, you know, in some of my rooms, there's farm animals on the walls, and, you know, there used to be Dora the Explorer, and, you know, different characters that are appropriate for the young age. But, you know, as you get to be older, you can laugh about it, but it still doesn't feel so comfortable to be sitting in those rooms.
Yeah, to have your own space is important at whatever age group. I mean, I'm going on a beach vacation next month, and I was telling my wife, I would like very much to find a beach where everybody there is in their late 50s. I don't want to be walking around shirtless with a bunch of people in their 20s. That to me would be the Dora the Explorer stickers on my doctor's office wall. And you want that place where, again, it's your own space, it's your own comfort. Kim, tell us more about that, about your discussions with Sherry and why you think having a kind of a standalone place like this is so important.
Well, we were at a conference on pediatric and adolescent gynecology, and you can imagine how awkward those stages and phases of life can be. And we kind of went, you know, it's awkward enough to have to come in. What if we created a space that was less awkward, that it felt a little bit more like home? And if you walk into our space, if you're an adolescent, you start to notice things that feel like your vibe, like your place. We really went kind of and broke the mold of the typical Bellin colors and Bellin, design, and made a lot of artistic and visual changes that may seem really little, but they're huge. You know, adolescents come in and they're used to technology. They're used to having something to scan as a QR code. And so we've tried to make that that space feel less awkward for them. And then also understanding that parents are often coming in too. So we make sure that we see them with their parents when they come with parent or guardian. And then we have time alone with the adolescents so that we can talk and get to know them better.
And your background is women's health. Sherry's background is pediatrics. Thinking about young girls as they are developing and they get to that point, you know, 11, 12, 13, we're talking about periods. We're talking about potentially 14, 15, you know, onset of sexual activity. There are so many things that need to be discussed that are really hard to talk about. Tell us how you approach some of those sensitive subjects with your patients, recognizing that they're a really vulnerable population.
I personally have found if I just let them talk, they're not used to having a space where they get to just talk because they were used to coming into the pediatrician's office and, you know, often their parent talks for them. So it doesn't always happen. The conversation doesn't always come out with the parent, although we sometimes try to bring it up. You know, a lot of times we'll ask about periods, any concerns with periods, and then often, you know, mom or dad or grandma will chime in. But when we have the parent go to the waiting room, often, you know, the patient comes out and really speaks about what their concerns are. I always try to ask about school, any issues with school. And that's also when things come up. I think it's hard for some, even though they're so much more open about periods and menstruation and tampons and all of that, they're used to talking about it, not hiding that tampon of shame like we did when we were growing up. But it's still a conversation that feels uncomfortable for them to talk to an adult. But once we give them that stage, it's amazing to me. I don't know, Sherry, if you would say the same thing. I feel like they're bringing it up.
Yeah, I would say the same. And I also think the fact that we're so comfortable talking about it and it's just so normal, natural. And, you know, even adolescent boys and talking about the things that they're going through, it's just part of life. And so we just talk about it like that's the way it is. It's part of life. And let's try to make it as easy for you as possible and answer any questions you have about it. So
I had a patient tell me recently that, do you like specialize in awkward? And I said, you know what? I think that's going on my tombstone. She specialized in awkward.
Knowing you, I think that's perfect.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So, Sherry, how do you approach patients differently in a setting like this than you would in your traditional pediatric setting?
I don't know that I approach them completely different, to be honest, at this age, but I think that there's just the comfort level of where they are and what's surrounding them. And it's pretty obvious when you walk through the space that we accept everyone and anyone, and anything's fair game to talk about in that space. So I feel like the space opens to more conversation, but you know, I always start my visits by telling teens that my job is to keep you happy, healthy, and safe. So let's try to figure out how to make that happen. And you can tell me anything and everything. And while I love your parent being here, I don't need your parent here for most of the things that you may want to talk about. And I can keep things confidential if you tell me that you're safe and that you're not hurting your body, and I don't have any concerns about those things. So, and you know, I definitely try to keep parents involved in the teens' care in every way possible, but we all know there are teens out there that wouldn't come get help if they didn't know that things could be kept confidential. And so we do honor that for them in that situation.
I think that safe space that you create is absolutely critical for this population. And I think that we've always known that, but actually creating that physical space has a giant impact. And never before in this state has it been more important for people to have a place where they can come and talk about questions and things that they're hearing in the world and get good, accurate information.
And to do so, as I think it was Kim that mentioned, you were able to break out of the corporate palette. You know, that every corporation has a brand book. And so, Kim, for you to mention that you could make it look more welcoming to adolescents and not necessarily stick with the corporate colors. I mean, I'm sure other folks are looking at you going, what kind of rebels are you? How did you manage to talk them into it? But clearly your discussions with other folks at Bellin held sway about the importance of that.
Yeah, we were fortunate to work with the Adolescent Health Institute. We had a grant, actually, in order to become kind of gold star providers of adolescent medicine. There were certain criteria that we needed to meet to satisfy that grant application. And Bellin fully supported us to create that safe space, as well as respect, you know, all of the people that come through our door. So that means, like Dr. Hoyman said, doesn't matter what you're coming in for, who are you bringing with you, and then making sure that, you know, that we really strive to just do what's best for our patients. And we were just very fortunate that, you know, the timing was right. Bellin was on board. We had support from this grant initiative to do things a little bit differently. And they're little things. I mean, I have people ask me all the time, like, well, what do you mean an adolescent clinic? And what does that look like? And it's kind of hard to describe unless you see it. But I have teens all the time that come in and they sit down in the exam room and they look at the walls and they look at the little, you know, you know, insightful phrases that we've put on the walls and little pictures. It's such a nuanced thing, but it's real. And patients perceive that.
Mm-hmm. And the colors, I think the coloring that we used, it's not the typical, you know, beiges and the greens and purples that some places have used. We've really kind of broken the mold completely, and bright colors, tie dye, you know, there's boards they can write on if they want with chalk or markers and give us their insight into things. There's signs up saying we welcome everyone. So it definitely is it's a warm, inviting space, but fun also. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, we had adolescents help us with it. We started doing some things and said, what do you think? Should we do it differently? And you know, got a lot of great advice from them as well.
So in our final couple of minutes, we probably can't talk to all three, all the groups, doctors beyond Bellin, administrators, certainly adolescents, and then parents. But let's just focus on the parents of adolescents who are not in your area. And so they will not have this kind of a specialized clinic, but they still want their teen or preteen to, you know, get the most out of their healthcare. What are the things that those parents should know about their adolescent's health and healthcare and doctor visits? When you see parents, what is the one thing that maybe you think they should change, or the one thing that they should always keep in mind to do? Kim, you want to start that?
Well, that is an excellent question. As a parent of two adolescents actively going through that phase, man, just one word, listen, listen, and truly give them time to talk. I think, you know, we're on those drive home, you know, well, before they're driving themselves home and they're in that vehicle with you, that is one of the most golden moments of your life. And you just have to listen. And then also, I think the second piece I would say is allowing them to start that transition into adulthood, encouraging them to take that brave step out of the nest and saying, you know what, you have an appointment today. These are the things that you will probably be asked, and I want you to take the lead. How do you feel about that? You know, just checking in with them and giving them those little nudges.
Our job as parents is not to protect them forever. It's to teach them how to live in the real world. And that's incredible. Sherry, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with everything Kim says. Honestly, I tell parents that all the time. Anytime you have the opportunity to drive your kids somewhere and just listen to what's happening in the back seat with their friends, that's huge. You're going to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something you file away and you talk about at a different time. You don't talk about it then. Give them space, you know, and pick your battles and make sure you, you know, find the things to talk about at the right time. And, you know, if your child's not in the right mood, it's not the right time to start opening a big can of worms to talk about. But, you know, I think listening and watching, if your child is, if your adolescent is starting to do things that are different, you know, not their typical, skipping out on sports that they loved so much before, those are things you just need to pay attention to. And
look for those key indicators, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Sherry Hoyman, Kim Shefchik, thank you so much. We really appreciate the visit. Kristen, thanks so much for bringing some great guests here once again.
We have some incredible things happening in our communities, and Sherry and Kim are those people.
And we'll be back with Luke Mathers after this. You're up north. Oh, it just occurs to me, Dan Schumacher, that I checked in with you like I always do to find out what Grateful Dead song you want to hear on Fridays, and you gave me one, and I forgot to pass it along to Aaron, so I don't know what Aaron did. Actually, could you catch what Aaron was playing there?
I didn't catch it.
Aaron, can you bring it back up, or is it gone?
Yep. Fire on the Mountain.
There
Fire
we go. That's it. And that is Name That Tune with Dan Schumacher. Name That Grateful Dead Tune. How are you this week? This is a busy one for you.
It really is. It's been constantly trying to rearrange schedules because of this storm. So,
yes.
You know, technically we were supposed to play basketball Wednesday and Thursday night and playoff basketball, but it did not work. So we had to move it to Friday, Saturday, along with wrestling was moved. Hockey's are going to be fine because they were set to play across the state on Friday night and Saturday, so we were good there. Everything got pushed or moved to a new date, new time, and as long as there was no new location, because people were objecting to changing home field advantage just to get around the storm.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean, just look at the hullabaloo in the NFL. If the AFC championship were to have been played on a neutral site, that, you know, people want their home field advantage, and they'll wait a day or something to get it. But, you know, it's again a reminder that behind the scenes, beyond the athletic talent of the folks on the team, there are logistics and folks that have to do that don't get nearly attention they should until something like this comes up. So this storm comes up, and you're up on the Chippewa River, you know, not too far from Jim Falls. And I was asking you if anybody was ice fishing out there on that stretch of the river, and you're telling me no, it's actually more like a recreational trail.
It is that you don't see too many people up here fishing. You might see them down a little bit, a couple blocks down the water here, but I see mostly cross-country skiers and snowmobilers are whip up here just to get to the edge of the water where it opens up north of here and then turn around and come back. So,
to which I can only say, come on, man.
I've also seen planes go pad. I've seen planes land in front on skis.
Yes, we do. We do have a couple of planes like that here. You had the Jigs Up ice fishing tournament as well.
Yeah, record day. And I attribute that to the weather. I mean, we doubled our kids fishing tournament to it. People from around the state came. Somebody from New Berlin, Wisconsin won the truck. There was prize winners from Rhinelander to Madison. It really has become an attraction statewide for people to come from all over, which fills up the hotels and is good for economic development here with the chambers.
Yeah, exactly. Let's look over at college basketball quick before I lose my train of thought. Marquette, 10th ranked in the nation. They will be hosting DePaul tomorrow evening at 6:30. The Badger men's basketball team is going to be playing in Michigan. That's on Sunday at 1:00. We are getting very close to conference tournaments and to March Madness. And everybody says the Badgers are, you know, like one of the first four out.
Yeah.
I don't know if
they got a good win this week. They beat Iowa. So that was a good win for them to get kind of put things back on track. And if they can get something at Michigan, is it Michigan or Michigan State? Do they have
Michigan?
Oh, that's always fun because Juwan and Guard don't exactly get along.
Oh, that's right. They got that incident was last season, wasn't it?
It was. And they played at the Kohl Center and everything was fine, but they, you know, they were just playing fake friends, as I always put it. So But it's a big week for everybody's conference room. You know what they've done down at Marquette with the Shaka. He's done a great job. I mean, he's won everywhere he's gone. He's no matter how small of Division One, you know, low mid major he's been at. He's won, and he brought that game to Marquette. And look at what he's doing at Marquette. I'm sure. I was listening the other day to somebody talking about, well, would he go to the Badgers if there was a change? And no, I don't think so. I don't think McIntosh is going to make a change with guard. I think guard is going to get another season.
All right. Well, let's turn to the NBA and, as I like to call it, wristwatch.
Yeah.
After Giannis Antetokounmpo injured his wrist about a week ago, and I guess he was practicing yesterday. It was lightly taped, but we won't find out until about 5:30 tonight whether he'll take part in a 6:30 game. And, I mean, is there any way to get around, you know, so much attention over one wrist on one athlete? I mean, when you're riding a 12-game winning streak, so I guess every little thing, a hangnail, you know, would do it.
Well, he's MVP. I mean, you're talking about the MVP of the NBA, or at least one of the one, two, or three people that are probably that stick out the most. You know, the way they were playing like they were on fire and ready to go and ready to win another NBA championship. So it's no different to me than waiting to see when Aaron Rodgers comes out of darkness. Okay.
Well, so that's the other thing. Apparently, those were the headlines yesterday that he's emerged from his cocoon again. Who cares? But
I know.
But he did. So we get to.
Did you see the video of it? Have you seen the video?
No. Was there video?
There's video out there from the owner of the place in Oregon where he went.
Oh God.
And there is lights inside the cabin. He's just choosing not to have them on or something. I don't know what the whole deal is, but somebody took a camera in there and they interviewed the owner of the place that he, because the owner was the one who divulged to the media that he has now been released from darkness.
Did he see his shadow? I mean, come on.
Yeah, what did I see the joke? Yeah, he saw his shadow, and Green Bay will not have a Super Bowl for 12 months.
it's just unbelievable. six more weeks of pointless questions about will he or won't he. So let's get to something much more in the here and now. Spring training baseball, the games begin tomorrow. Brewers are playing the Dodgers, and you being a Southsider,
I'm a Northside fan.
There we go. I got it right there. Have you made your have you looked at the calendar yet and identified the first Cubs games you're going to? After all, the Brewers open the season at Wrigley Field at the end of March.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet, but I will. I'm going to try to see. They occasionally have played the Twins. The Cubs and Twins play. So I've been interested in going over and seeing. I've not been to the Target Field.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of interested to try to find it. I'm not too appealed to go watch the White Sox too much, especially last year. But if the Cubs are playing the Twins, if there's that crossover of those divisions, I definitely will try to make it there. But if not, there'll be sometime in the summer I'll make it to Wrigley Field.
Wait a minute.
Outside, outside of the Grateful Dead concerts.
So you want, of course. So you want to be one of those annoying Cubs fans at the visitors' ballpark, like the way that American Family Field.
Fan, but I will wear my Cubs jersey.
Okay.
Probably my Mark Grace or, you know, Ryan Sandberg one. But Cub fans are everywhere.
Yes, they are. No doubt.
They're everywhere.
Dan Schumacher, thanks so much. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right. Take care. Yep. Coming up on Monday, it'll be another edition of Motherhood Monday, where we'll talk to the folks from Motherhood for Good, and they will talk about what busy moms need to know about all of the school board elections happening around Wisconsin on April 4th. Again, remember, you can follow me on Facebook. Look for Pat Kreitlow Up North or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. That's Kreitlow. Up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba across the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday.